Interesting that he used the example of the priests here in verse 5, excuse me. That for the priests, they had to work on Shabbat. They had all kinds of stuff they had to do. But the law very clearly said, okay, even though that they're working, stuff that they have to do so that your Shabbat could be restful, even though they have to, they're innocent. That right there tells you that the whole law of Shabbat was not absolute. Got to understand. By the way, Sunday is not a really relaxing day for me, even if it was Shabbat. My job is for whoever shows up on this day that we've set apart for God to be together. My job is to make sure that you are drenched in the presence of the Lord. You're learning about Him. You're brought into personal contact with Him, which is where the joy and the peace all come from, and where we can love on each other. But it's not a real restful day for me. So I take Thursday. Thursday is my Shabbat. I have to tell you that when I first began to hear from God about this, my knee-jerk reaction was that God was mad at me, that I wasn't taking a day off. It's the whole way my thinking was as a kid. By the way, I didn't want to go to heaven all the way into my 20s. I didn't want to go to heaven because I had also been presented with the picture that heaven was going to be an eternal church service. I hated church. I'm still not too wild about it. I have to admit, I'm here because we're here in God's presence together, and I need that. And I love you, but I'm not here because I love church. I do know guys that are in ministry that just love church. That seems twisted to me in my brain, but, you know, there are people like that. That's okay. That's not me. I love Jesus. I love to be around other people that love Jesus, and this is one day that we've set aside when we can do that. But when God began speaking to me about Shabbat, it was when I began understanding what it was that Shabbat was supposed to be for Israel. And as I'm reading all of this and I'm thinking, oh, this is really wonderful, this is really wonderful. God just wanted people to take a day when they weren't working, where they weren't beating themselves up, and just hang out with Him and spend it with Him. The church I was raised in, it was just filled that, what we called the Sabbath on Sunday, was filled with church stuff, and it was not restful. In fact, if it was restful, you were doing it wrong. If you felt better, you were less spiritual. Isn't that twisted? That's exactly the way it was in Jesus' day, and that's why in these examples, he says, you've just got this so backwards. You haven't even read what the law says about it. When God began speaking to me about Thursday, he said, son, you're not doing this. He's saying, what if you just took one day and you didn't do anything that looked like your normal work? But just hang out with me. I thought, well, I wouldn't want anybody to know. Because I, at that time, had a bunch of people in my church that would have thought I was sloughing off on my job. I remember one Thursday, one Shabbat, I decided to work on my Mini. For me, I'm just not mechanically inclined, so that was like, it took me 3 hours to find and remove a cotter pin in my Mini. Of course, it's so little, you have to be a contortionist to even see it. But I remember I called, because they were open on Thursday, despite that it was my Shabbat. I remember calling the Mini Parts place in California, and they said, well, we have to send to England. I'm thinking, I need it now. Can they fax it to me? Of course, they couldn't. But I called another place in upstate New York, and she said, would you like it this afternoon or tomorrow? And I said, that depends. Will it cost more than my car to get it here? And she said, well, I can guarantee you for X number of dollars, which was pretty cheap, that you'll have it in your hot little hands tomorrow. And she said, if you live in a very rural place, they might have to deliver it on Sunday. Will you be home? And I said, well, no, I'm a minister. And she says, oh, that's the day you work. Like, I work one day a week, and the whole rest of the time I play golf. So yeah, what a cushy job. That's why I make the big bucks, folks. Just the real wrong idea. Can I tell you the struggle that I had taking one day that I didn't do anything that felt like work? I just spent that day with Jesus. I struggled for months about feeling completely irresponsible. When I pastored a really large church, God spoke to me about this because I had this dilemma. You know, I had a church of about 1,000 people. And every day on the way to church, the minute I got there, I had a whole list of things to do. And the minute that I got home, I had a whole different list of things to do. And if I just wanted to spend any time with Jesus, I had to take the long way to work, and I had to take the long way home. And he began dealing with me then about it, but I have to say, I did not trust him enough to do something that was good for me. I just didn't trust that he would still, that everything would still get done. And that was the issue when he began. Now, we weren't huge, but we were pretty much full in this little church. And he just began telling me, you know, you're suffering. I'm not mad at you, but you're suffering. Because you're not just taking a day to rest. The minute you take a day off, what I did for months was I just did the honey-do list. I did, okay, I've got a free day. I don't have to work at the building or I'm not studying, so here I'm going to just do this stuff. And he says, no. You're missing the point. The point is for you to rest. You need it. Yes, but I feel guilty. He says, all the more reason you need it. You need to just unload that weight off your shoulders, spend a day where you don't do anything except hang out with me. Now, it's easy when my boat's in the water, which it hasn't been for 8 years. I don't even have to go anywhere. I can just go putter. I'm going to just go sit there, or I can go for a drive out through the country. I just, of course, for Paul, that would be work because that's what he does for a living. But whatever it is that you can spend a day with Jesus, can I tell you, that was what Shabbat was for. He knew his people needed it. He also knew that if he didn't make it a rule, nobody would do it. And even then, they looked for loopholes. It's the way we are. Now, if you're feeling guilty right now because you didn't take a day off, then you're missing the point. This isn't about you feeling guilty. But you are missing out. This is all stuff I told this guy who asked me the original question about should I stay open and work on Saturday. Once we got the whole, I'm on Sunday. Once we got the whole, don't worry, it's not the Sabbath. The Old Testament law about Sabbath doesn't apply to Sunday. We're not under that law, blah, 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 blah. And I began talking to him. This was a guy who had a heart attack a couple of years later out of just sheer stress. One of the most driven people I've ever known. I said, here's what concerns me. If you have an opportunity to be with God's people, people that love Jesus, that are hungry to know him, and you have a chance to not have any weight on your shoulders, and you have a chance to come and worship together for at least part of a day, and then spend the rest of the day kicking back in God's presence, and anything robs you of that, that concerns me because I love you. And of course, here's the twisted thing the devil does. The more people load themselves down, guess who gets blamed for being a hard taskmaster? Guess whose yoke is not easy and whose burden is not light anymore? God's the one that gets blamed. God, how dare you? But see, that isn't what God said. It wasn't the way the law was given, and it wasn't even why the law was given. It was a gift. It was God saying, I'll cover you for one day. Hang out with me. I'll carry the weight. And then every 7 years, wouldn't it be amazing if that was a law we were under? Every 7 years you didn't do anything except just have a year of celebration in God's presence? Yeah, that'll work. You know what? It did. When Israel followed that, God kept his end of the bargain. So they were missing the whole point. What I told this man was, I said, if you're working on this day, which we've set aside as a day that we're going to get together and feed ourselves, and you're not feeding yourself, that's like saying, I'm not going to eat today, I'm just going to work instead. You're going to pay a price for that, right? Your body's got to have food. It's got to have, you push yourself hard enough, your body will say, that's it, I'm out of here, I quit. And God made your body. So he says, you can't do this. You can't lift this way. It's not the life I have for you. You need to just kick back. Is this sounding like something you've never heard before? Or have you heard just the opposite? If you go tell another pastor and I get hate mail, Bob, if you talk like this, nobody's going to come to church. In one sense, that wouldn't bother me. If the reason you weren't here was because you were spending that time with Jesus, and it was more quality time with Jesus than if you were here, then that would be my problem. That would, if you have to stay away from this place to spend time with Jesus, then you should need to fire me. But that usually isn't the issue, is it? But what if, on my Thursdays, I love Thursdays. In fact, I love Wednesday night. I'm not even Jewish, so Shabbat technically hasn't even started the night before. I love Wednesday night because I just got to have a service with you guys, and I got to see God's Word do its work, and I got to see all of our teens, and then I realize when I wake up tomorrow, I don't have to do anything all day long except hang out with Jesus. So I wake up in the morning, and it's like, what are we going to do today? I remember when God first began to speak to me about this, I was having dinner in a restaurant that was run by a cult. I went there because they had the best food in town. I knew they were a cult, and they always had people come and hit on me, but I also, so I knew where that was at, and I wasn't about to start, you know, join their cult and drink Kool-Aid and all that stuff, but they really did have the best organic food in town. They're not even in the state anymore. They got kicked out. But I remember overhearing something that a father was saying to his children. They're sort of in the back room, and I'm eating my lentil burrito or whatever the thing was that I was eating that was so fabulous. And I overheard the father say, guess what tomorrow is? And the kids were jumping down saying, Shabbat, Shabbat, it's Shabbat tomorrow. And he said, Shabbat is the best day of the week, isn't it? Yes, Daddy, yes. And this was one like zombies that said this. This truly was the most delightful day of the week. Do you know any church people like that? Do you know any? God wanted this whole nation of Israel to feel that way. It was all about unburdening yourself. And if you're doing it, if you're coming here and burdening yourself, you're doing it wrong. Pick up the CD from last week and look what it is that Jesus invites us to when he says, come to me. You're already overburdened. Don't come to me and I'll give you a ton of more burdens to carry. Come to me, I will give you rest. There is a way in which being in Rockland on Tuesday, being here on Wednesday, being here yesterday for the prayer breakfast, being here today with you guys is tremendously nourishing. But it's not the same as when I have a day that I don't do anything, it even feels like work. I just hang out with Jesus. It restores my soul. Americans don't know how to do this. Somehow it's gotten twisted that it's irresponsible, and we don't know how to do this, and we suffer. And God is just saying, I got something better for you. So that's my little sermon on Shabbat, what it's for. I want to read you a couple of scriptures. I want to read you in Romans 14 and in Colossians chapter 2 because they are new covenant, new contract between God and his people, scriptures. Chapter 14 of Romans is famous for addressing a conflict between legalistic Christians and non-legalistic Christians. And of course, legalistic Christians think that non-legalistic Christians aren't even Christians. There are people actually in this county, probably in this town, who are Christians that if they knew that you were having a good time in your Christianity, would have a bee in their bonnet. They would be really angry. And of course, they would be doing whatever they could do to see that you don't have a good time in your Christianity. And I feel sorry for them. So chapter 14 is talking about certain issues of that legalism was causing division from the body. Some people were harassing other people. And a lot of it had to do with food. But I'm just going to read the part that applies to the Sabbath, Shabbat. Romans 14, beginning at verse 5. In the same way, excuse me, I'll back up. Who are you, verse 4, to condemn God's servants? They are responsible to the Lord. So let him tell them whether they're right or wrong. I'm reading from the New Living Translation, by the way. I love the way it's worded. They're responsible to the Lord, so let him tell them whether they're right or wrong. The Lord's power will help them to do as they should. In the same way, some think one day is more holy than another day, while others think every day is alike. That's me. Each person should have a personal conviction about this matter. Those who have a special day for worshiping the Lord are trying to honor him. Those who eat all kinds of food do so to honor the Lord, since they give thanks to God before they eat. Those who won't eat everything also want to please the Lord and give thanks to God. We are not our own masters when we live or when we die. While we live to please the Lord. While we die, we go to be with the Lord. Remember, he's talking to Christians. So in life and in death, we belong to the Lord. Christ died and rose again for this very purpose, so that he might be the Lord of those who are alive and of those who have died. So why do you condemn another Christian? Why do you look down on another Christian? Remember, each of us will stand personally before the judgment seat of God. It's interesting to me to look at what he says a little bit later. He said, you're going to be a happy person if you don't wind up being condemned for the things that you allow. He said, you need to have this issue settled between you and the Lord. He's the one you live your life for. Don't let somebody come between you. Folks, this is true. Don't let me come between you and the Lord. If I'm telling you something different than what he's telling you, fire me. And if you don't find somebody that's going to tell you the same stuff that he's then go to another church. Whenever God tells you not to do something, he's the same as him saying, don't hurt yourself. I made you. I know what works. I've got the best ideas for you. Let's flip over to Colossians chapter 2, verses 16. Oh, boy, I'd just love to read the whole rest of that chapter. Begin at verse 16, talking about the same issues. Don't let anyone condemn you for what you eat or drink, or for not celebrating certain holy days, or new moon ceremonies, or Sabbaths. Because these rules were only shadows of the real thing, Christ himself. Don't let anyone condemn you by insisting on self-denial, and don't let anyone say you must worship angels even though they say they've had visions about this. These people claim to be so humble, but their sinful minds have made them proud. They are not connected to Christ, the head of the body. And then he goes on to talk about our position in Christ. The phrase that jumps out at me in Colossians 2 is, these things are shadows, and the reality is in Christ himself. That's the new covenant we're under. There's a lot of stuff in the Old Testament that was a picture, a type, a shadow, a representation of something that is fulfilled because of the relationship to God we now have in Jesus.